There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
25 minutes away from the early kickoffs in the German Bundesliga. One game off in Italy, though, down in Serie A. Just 3 minutes into this one, Roma taking on Torino in the early kickoff over there. Just after 7 o'clock local time in the UAE, at 7:15. You get Real Madrid against Sevilla. That'll be shown live down here at Barasti. So make sure you make a beeline down here to watch that one. We've already been treated to a great game in the Premier League. Approaching the last 10 minutes of the game, Mark Archer's been watching on with interest and trying to keep up.
Plenty of goals and action in the second half time. It was 2-0 to the home team Wolves at half time. Goals by Jota and a header by Ryan Bennett. Leicester fought back quickly into the second half, equalised up with a great goal from Damari Gray and a fine finish also from Harvey Barnes. But Jota has taken Wolves back into the lead. So with 10 minutes remaining, it's Wolverhampton Wanderers 3, Leicester City 2.
We've got Arsenal against Chelsea for you later on, 9:30 local time here in the UAE. That one, you'll get live commentary courtesy of our friends and colleagues over at TalkSport here in the region. Before that, from 7 o'clock, whole host of games to look forward to, which could have impacts at both the top and the bottom of the table. Watford taking on Burnley. Southampton are at home against Everton. Newcastle are taking on Cardiff. Liverpool could extend their lead at the top of the table if they beat Crystal Palace a little later on. Our feature game, though, will be Manchester United against Brighton. Man U on something of a roll, and the man who's going to be calling that one for you, courtesy of all the team at TalkSport, is Mr. Russell Hargraves, who joins us live on the line now. Russell, thanks for your time ahead of this fascinating game, and what with records tumbling for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I think it's fair to say that the feel-good factor is back at Old Trafford.
Very much so, and a very good afternoon to you guys. Should be an intriguing match, I totally agree. And you're spot on, six straight wins in all competitions, five in the Premier League, and various other records that could be broken by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer today. It's been absolutely fantastic what he's achieved. I don't think he's necessarily done it with any masterful tactical kind of acumen. He's just come in, been sensible, set the team up in a way that puts a smile back on their face, allows the players to express themselves and just go out there and prove what they can do. We know the quality of the squad and the likes of Paul Pogba, but utterly resurgent now. Marcus Rashford as well. They're the classic two examples. And United riding a crest of a wave and right up to joint fifth, and would go fifth for a few hours at least ahead of Arsenal if they win. What more can you ask for from what he's done since December?
The old saying, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. Is that much along the lines of team news that we're getting through from Old Trafford for today?
Exactly that. It's an unchanged team for Manchester United and for Brighton as well. I can't remember the last time I did a Premier League game where both teams were unchanged, but you spot on David De Gea in goal, back four, Ashley Young, Phil Jones, Victor Lindelof and Luke Shaw, and then Ander Herrera, Nemanja Matic and Paul Pogba in midfield, Jesse Lingard, Anthony Martial supporting Rashford up front. So the likes of Alexis Sanchez back to the bench after injury, Lukaku can only make the bench, so can Juan Mata. All of a sudden there's genuine competition for places and real momentum in that club as well, and a lot more positivity in the dressing room, and the amount of players who've made that clear in either veiled or in some cases fairly evident terms in recent weeks, I think speaks volumes about the change in almost every guard.
For my sins, I have fathered a Manchester United fan who's enjoying his football as well now. I also work with a number of my colleagues who are Manchester United fans. The feel-good factor seems to be back for them. A penny for the thoughts then of Jose Mourinho. Now, we know he's appearing on an international over an international channel at the moment. We're giving his thoughts a little later on. But a penny for his thoughts of what we've seen the last six games under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What did Jose get so wrong?
I think what's fascinating personally is that you've got Solskjaer back, who's old school and part of that old guard from Sir Alex Ferguson's days. You've got the fact that he's got the ear of Sir Alex, who's helping him with team selection and giving him advice as well. And that feeling that the club have just gone back a few years to when they were at their very peak, not just in their style, but I think in just their wider approach. The players are back to wearing their blazers as they travel into grounds and represent the team, you know, on corporate affairs and so on. And I just think for a few years, the club lost its identity, and there was always that fear when Jose Mourinho came in. So Bobby Charlton was one of the first to say it from the boardroom. We're a club who do things in a certain respectful and very classic way. We've got to have a manager that does the same. And there was the fear that Mourinho wasn't that kind of guy. He clearly wasn't. player power increased. I think the role of the agents increased. And you look at someone like Sir Alex, he was such a controlling figure in every sense. The players couldn't step out of line, and it really, really worked. I appreciate that the game evolves and changes over time, but I think Solskjaer back in, just tapping into that wider feeling. What will be interesting, though, boys, is if things start to go wrong at any point. If he loses a couple of games, as I say, he's not this incredible manager with a great kind of managerial history. There is the chance that cracks could appear, but at the moment they're not. They're far from it. And for that wider momentum reason that I've highlighted, they just go from strength to strength. And the club feels, I think, it's got its old soul and its old identity back at the moment.
Russell, just staying with Manchester United, obviously looking for 7 consecutive victories, which I think is some sort of record in the Premier League by a new incoming manager. First 5 matches for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer were deemed to be easier fixtures, but last week they made what I would call a statement win against a top 3 team, and David De Gea was absolutely immense in the second half of that match. That type of victory is what they've needed to beat teams above them, not necessarily beat the teams below them in the league, but they needed to knock over a couple of the big guys, whether it be a Chelsea, a Tottenham and Arsenal, to really put some pressure on that top 4 finish.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So Carlo Ancelotti at Chelsea in 2009 and Pep Guardiola at City in 2016 both won their first 5 games in charge, sorry, their first 6. So he's looking to equal those records. And in terms of the club itself, Sir Matt Busby won 5. It's actually 25 years since Sir Matt passed, so there's going to be a minute of applause, funnily enough, for the man whose record, as a club record, Solskjaer has just beaten. So you're right, 6 straight in the Premier League and 7 straight in all competitions would either equal or beat those 2 records for that exact reason. And what more can you possibly ask for from a team who are absolutely buzzing at the moment? So I think for that reason the atmosphere is going to be absolutely spot on. And from Brighton's point of view, they have bloodied the nose of one or two decent teams over the course of the season. They've actually beaten Man U in their last 2 head-to-head meetings. Both were at the Amex, 1-0 and 3-2 in May and August of last year, but they've never in their whole history won at Old Trafford. They've lost 8 and drawn 2 of the 10 times that they've gone, and that is a massive ask for them. They're playing 4-5-1. They're going to really pack that midfield and make themselves tough to break down. As we know, they only lost 1-0 against Liverpool last time out through that slightly contentious Mo Salah penalty, and before that the Seagulls had actually won 2 and drawn 2 of their last 4. So they're a team generally back on the up, a minor blip last week pending, and that will be intriguing as well. But for me, I just think it's asking too much with the momentum behind United at the moment, and I'm pretty sure that it might take a while to break them down for the Red Devils, but they'll do so and probably pull away for something like a 3-0 win.
Russell, I want to talk about a man as we have a goal being scored right now. We're going to break away for you real quick, Russell. We have a goal in the Wolverhampton-Leicester game. Boy, this is just an exciting game. 3-3 off of a kick. And Mark Archer, who was on the goal there?
Yeah, free kick came in, and it's big. Where's Morgan?
Wow.
Jumped in back, far post, header. And it's basically what a match now. 3-3 into the final 5 minutes of the game. It's been a goal fest from Molyneux, but Wolverhampton Wanderers 3, Leicester 3. Let's go back to Russell quickly.
Russell, I think you picked the wrong game to commentate on today, but one man I want to ask you about who will not be with the Red Devils on the sideline is Miron Fellaini. Thierry Henry is rumored to wanting to bring him on loan out to Monaco. Is this rumor picking up any steam? Do you see him suiting up for Monaco soon?
It's possible, and also he's just been ruled out for a month with injury as well, Marouane Fellaini. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer spoke about that primarily at the media conference yesterday our time, saying that Fellaini, as a big kind of handful and awkward kind of player, can add a certain X factor. I think we are seeing, though, as the years tick on, that he's not integral to Manchester United. And also with Solskjaer's much more expansive and sweeping and pace-ridden kind of style of play, he's more, I would say, of a Mourinho player in that team that requires on a bit more of a languid approach, a bit more physicality. I'm not entirely sure that somebody like Fellaini would have a massive role, injury aside, to even play. I wouldn't be surprised if he went. I know that Solskjaer wants to freshen things up. He's keen to hold on to Scott McTominay, the young midfielder who's been linked with a loan move to Celtic. Yeah, I could see that happening, and Fellaini himself maybe needs a new kind of kickstart to his career, having just fallen from his peak from a few years ago. So we'll wait and see. I think the chance to go to Monaco, play with Henry, play with the likes of Cesc Fabregas, who's gone there in recent times as well, and be a part of that project, it would make sense. But picking up this knock now may mean it's not until the summer. We'll wait and see for the rest of the January transfer window and what business is done.
Just a final one for you by way of predictions, Russell, for ahead of this feature game, Manchester United entertaining Brighton. Brighton have never won at Old Trafford.
Yep.
So are they going to buck the trend today?
No, I don't think they will. I think they'll make it tough for about 40 minutes. I can see United getting one just before the break, and I can see them then pulling away. Not an absolute tonking, because Brighton are too good a team for that, but I could see United, say, taking it about 3-0. I mentioned Pogba, and I mentioned Rashford with their excellent form of late. Rashford with either assists or goals, 10 in his last 9, absolutely fantastic. And Pogba's contributed more than half of the goals, either assists or goals, that Man United have scored since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took over. So those two, just resurgent. I'm sure there'll be a goal for each of those boys. And we'll chuck in one more from perhaps a Martial. Who knows, maybe a Matra, Sanchez and Lukaku off the bench. Perhaps they'll get the third. I think we're looking something in roughly those kind of terms.
Looking forward to it. It's 7 o'clock kickoff local time here in the UAE. You're going to be calling it. Russell, who's alongside you this afternoon?
Pleased to say it's the former Crystal Palace, Charlton and Aston Villa midfielder Paul Mortimer, legend of a man. I just tweeted that little picture of us getting ready. So, can't wait for it. It should be an absolute belter. We'll suck down a cup of tea and take our positions in the commentary box.
We will retweet that to all and sundry here in the UAE. Bless you. Thanks so much indeed. Enjoy the game. Thanks, Russell.
Always a pleasure. See you later on, guys. Thanks a lot.
Big thanks to Russell Hargreaves, all the team at Talk Sport. Stay tuned. 7 o'clock, you've got that one. I just want to mention as well, obviously, you've got the Manchester United Brighton live commentary, courtesy of Russell and Paul Mortimer on that one. But it will also get all the goals, as and when the goals go in the other games, and some belters to look forward to from 7 o'clock. So as the goals go in, you'll hear them here on Dubai Eye Winner 3.8. And then stay tuned straight after that for a cracker of a game. Arsenal taking on Chelsea. And some chat, Mark Archer, that Gonzalo Higuain could be on his way to Chelsea. That's one of the rumours doing the rounds at the moment.
Because Alvaro Morata is about to head off, I think, to Spain. Atletico Madrid. Is that correct?
Might well be. So, who knows with the transfer merry-go-round at the moment.
So Chelsea definitely looking like they need a new striker. And I think they need a new striker before he was actually, looks like he's departing. So, yeah, interesting. Massive clash that, because, you know, that's the teams that are in fourth and fifth, and that's where Manchester United. And what's interesting about that result on that game is, if that game's a draw, Manchester United will jump ahead of Arsenal in the league.
If they win,
and then they're only actually 4 points behind Chelsea in fourth place. And 1 month ago, who would have thought they're even on the brink of anywhere near Champions League football? But that's almost two races now at the top. You've got the top two teams in the Premier League. I think Tottenham now, with Harry Kane's injury, are really going to struggle to push to break into that top two. They may even fall back a bit, but that battle there for third and, well, for fourth particularly, between maybe three clubs, will be a fascinating twist of the tail towards the end of the Premier League season.
We watch on with interest. More sport coming your way in just a few moments' time. An unbelievable game in the Premier League. Early kickoff, Wolves against Leicester. It's all happening down there at the moment. We've just seen the Wolves manager be sent off from the ground, probably because he was on the ground celebrating with his players. They're not allowed to do that, surely.
Well, we're in the final minute of stoppage time, in the 94th minute, and it was tied in at 3-3 when time was up, and we've just seen a winner. I would expect, mind you, let's not rule anything out in the final stages of this match, which is still going on, and Leicester are now hot on attack. But it's a goal, a fourth goal for Wolverhampton Wanderers, and a hat-trick to their striker, Jota, who's had a wonderful match now. And he's taken, with his third goal, his hat-trick, it means that in the final seconds of this match, it's Wolverhampton Wanderers 4, Leicester City 3. It was 2-0 to Wolves at half-time. Leicester fought back to get it to all, and then it's been a goal fest in the second half. It's been end to end action. There hasn't been a lot of defensive nous shown by either team, and I can tell you, Tom, we're still not there at full time yet. But it is Wolves 4. It's all over now, I can tell you, and it's a great victory for Wolves. But they made it hard for themselves after that 2-0 lead. But yeah, full time from Molyneux. Wolves 4, Leicester City 3. What a match between the two mid-country rivals there.
Extraordinary game, setting things up nicely for the remainder of our games in the Premier League. And a quick reminder that you got live coverage of Manchester United against Brighton from 7 o'clock, plus all the goals from the other games. And then straight after that, stay tuned, from 9:30 this evening, Arsenal taking on Chelsea. Let's go stateside, Roscoe.
Yeah, let's go stateside, because it is the business end of the NFL season. If you are an NFL team fan of the Los Angeles Rams, the New Orleans Saints, the New England Patriots, or the Kansas City Chiefs, you still have a dog in the fight, as they say back home, because Monday morning at 12:05, the Rams will take on the Saints. Then Monday morning at 3:40 a.m., the Patriots will be taking on the Chiefs. The first game I want to look at is on the NFC side of things. It's going to be the Los Angeles Rams, the new Los Angeles Rams, heading to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana, taking on the Saints. The Saints open this game as favorites, 3.5-point favorites over the Rams. Rams are led by quarterback Jared Goff. They have one of the best running backs in the league in Todd Gurley II, who has over 1,200 yards rushing on the season and 17 touchdowns. But the Saints have a big wide receiver in Michael Thomas, who has over 125 catches, over 1,000 yards in 9 TDs this year. Of course, the man throwing him the ball is Drew Brees. Drew Brees comes into this NFC matchup as the favorite, as he has been the favorite in most of his games this year. There's been a lot of expectations in New Orleans, and he's been able to manage those expectations. So, but the other game we're going to be looking at
today, aren't we?
Drew, we'll try to find that audio clip for you if you're listening at home. But Drew Brees taking on the Rams. Rams coming into this one. I guess the Rams are the more less experienced team. Mark Archer going against a guy in Drew Brees who's kind of been there and done that. 40 years old now, Drew Brees. He's not a young guy out of college, out of Purdue. But certainly, you think you'd want to go with the experience in this game?
Yeah, I mean, experience means so much in the playoffs, doesn't it, Ross? And here's a guy that's been there, done there, got the certificate, and what a career he's had. A fantastic passer of the football. He leads that team so well, and to have the longevity that he's had in such a position that does get hit occasionally. A bit like Tom Brady, he's probably two quarterbacks that really have been there for multiple decades now. And a fascinating and long career that he's had. Probably hasn't got all the success that he's deserved at time. New Orleans, have they won one Super Bowl in recent years?
He's won one Super Bowl.
I guess he's been, in many ways, been in the shadow of the likes of Tom Brady. But wonderful career, a good guy as well. One of the good guys in the league who's always been a sort of outstanding citizen, and you just know he's done great for that club. But how do you see this game being won and lost, and who do you think is the favorite going into this conference final?
I see a lot of touchdowns in this game. I really do. I think this is going to be a high-scoring matchup because both these offenses seem to really click behind their quarterback. So I think this will be actually the more entertaining of the two games to watch. But I'm going to go with Drew Brees in this one. I really do think the Saints are brewing something down there in New Orleans. And, you know, he's a guy that's been there. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's a 12-time Pro Bowler. Yeah, so I'm going to pick experience in this one, and I'm going to pick it in a high-scoring game. And I'm going to say something like 38-31 in this one, and we're going to see a ton of points, ton of touchdowns in the NFC Championship. Here we go. We got Drew Brees on the line now with how to manage expectations going into the big game. Oh, no, we don't. We actually do not. It's just been one of those days out here at Barasti, if you're listening at home. Very, very cold. This has been a very, very cold day for our network, and it's a cold day in temperature. So we're going to switch over to the other game. We're going to look at those New England Patriots. They know a little bit about winning, don't they, Mark Archer, going against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Kansas City Chiefs actually are the home team in this one. They're the number one seed. So this game will be played at a nice, brisk Arrowhead Stadium where they're calling for temperatures to be close to 5 degrees Fahrenheit. Kansas City, Missouri. This game will be brutally cold. The Patriots coming into this game led by quarterback Tom Brady, who knows a thing or two about winning, and coach Bill Belichick. However, the Chiefs are coached by Andy Reid, his 20th year in the league. He's 12-13 in the playoffs. So it depends on what kind of how you want to look at that one, but they are led by Patrick Mahomes, whose dad played Major League Baseball. The leading rusher coming in this game is Sonny Michel, who plays for the New England Patriots. He has 931 yards on the ground. And Tyreek Hill, the explosive wide receiver of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's 87 receptions, over 1,400 yards, and 12 touchdowns. This guy is dynamite. He is so fun to watch. He's one of the fastest guys in the league. But because of the cold temperatures, I'm going to expect a low-scoring game in this one. And in this game, it'll be very, very – it'll come down to the defenses. And one of the guys on defense is Eric Berry. Eric Berry is one of the top defenders for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he's been playing with what seems to be an injury all year long, but you wouldn't know it in his press conferences.
I feel pretty good. Just talk to coach and see, you know, what he wants to do, and just go from there.
You talked a lot about how they're trusting you with how you feel. So if you're playing a game today, you're playing. Is that, do you feel like you can play today?
Just by how I'm feeling, you know, but I still got to talk to coach and see, you know, his overall plan for it.
Eric, what would you say has been the greatest complication in your recovery?
It's hard to put a finger on it. And it's hard for me to sit up here and explain it. So right now, I just know that it's moving in the right direction. And, you know, I'm just wanting to get on the field on Sunday.
You can clearly tell Mr. Berry was briefed by the PR department. Do not disclose anything about your injury. And he did a very good job in his presser right there. But Eric Berry, amazing story there, coming back from beating cancer, coming back from a broken leg, now leading those Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead and trying to make it to the Super Bowl. Well, he's going to have to get by one of the best coach, if not the greatest coach of all time, in Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, the most successful coach-quarterback duo to ever play in the NFL. Bill Belichick, one reporter asked him the question, do you still get excited for the big for these games?
Just let me know the next game that doesn't matter so I can take that into account. Just let me know the ones that don't matter. But I'll make sure I don't get excited for those.
Nervous, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, you want to go out there and do well. There's an anxiety. We all have things in the game that we have to do. You want to perform them well, not let your team down, because everybody's counting on you to do your job. You're counting on everybody else to do theirs. You don't worry about everybody else. You just worry about doing what you can do and make sure you don't screw up what you're supposed to be responsible for, because nobody else can do that. That's your job. And we all have jobs to do, so and we all want to do them well.
There you have Bill Belichick. Boy, he is one of the most entertaining men at the microphone, I think, in the world of sport. You would have no idea he's playing for a game to get to the biggest stage in the world of sport, which would be the Super Bowl. But that's the Patriots way, and that's just how it's been with Bill Belichick over the years. He seems like a cranky guy on the sidelines, but guess what he gets you? He gets you victories. He gets you Super Bowls. The last 17 Super Bowls, gentlemen, the New England Patriots have played in 8 of them. That's nearly a Super Bowl every other year the last 2 decades. Now, I can't think of any other franchise in American sport that has been just quite as successful as those pesky New England Patriots are. They just know how to win. And when it comes down to a game like this, Mark Archer, when you're going against experience versus inexperience, Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes, you have to side with experience again, or you go with the new young leader?
I'll tell you what, I think you throw out the stats there, and I'm going to go with the team with the inexperience. I'm going to go with the team with the home field advantage here. Kansas City have been probably throughout the season the most consistent and the best team in the NFL. Great record, 12 wins, only 4 losses on the season. And their form in recent weeks has been pretty outstanding as well. But you look at this, who was their last loss against? It was against the Patriots. 43-40. So that they have caused some psychological damage to them. But since they lost to the Patriots, they've pretty much gone through pretty well, impressive in their results. Wins against the Jaguars, the Broncos, the 49ers, your beloved Steelers. They knocked over the Chargers at the final game of the regular season, and they were dominant against Indianapolis Colts in the last round of the postseason. So they are in good form. And what I like about them, Ross, is I look at their sort of statistical makeup. They're a balanced attack. They have one of the finds and stars of the season, Patrick Mahomes, who threw 50 touchdown passes. That's phenomenal. 5,000 passing yards. But in Kareem Hunt at running back and at Tyreek Hill, they have multiple weapons. And they can beat you in multiple different ways. A well-coached team. I just think them being at home with the form, I just think also Brady and Belichick, maybe it's the year that they don't make the Super Bowl final. That's me. I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
I'm going to go against you there, and I'm going to go with experience. I'm going to pick those New England Patriots, and I think they're going to win by a hair, and I'll say 17-14. And just by chance, gentlemen, I played a little game with myself, and for those of you listening at home, I am going to pat myself on the back. I've correctly picked every single NFL playoff game this year, and last year I don't think I picked a single one correctly. So if you're playing at home, and you want to listen on, I'm going to go New England Patriots win in a cold one at Arrowhead Stadium, 17-14, and they make it to the Super Bowl. Drew Brees going against Tom Brady, two of the NFL's all-time greats under center. And there you have it, Tom Urquhart.
Thank you very much indeed. Just to let you know that Roma have taken a first-half lead against Torino in the early kickoff in Serie A. Nicolo Zaniolo with the man on the score. He scored after 15 minutes. So it's Roma 1, Torino 0. Let's take a short break.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Roma have just scored a second in their game against Torino. From the penalty spot, in fact, Alexander Kolarov slotting on 34 minutes to make it a 2-0 lead for the home team over in Serie A. We've just witnessed a great one over in the Premier League. That was the early kickoff. Wolverhampton Wanderers coming up on top in a classic against Leicester. Finished 4-3, with the Wolves manager being sent to the stand as well for encroaching onto the field of play and celebrating with his players after that fourth goal in injury time. We're getting ready for Manchester United against Brighton and, of course, all the other 7 o'clock kickoffs. I'm going to bring you some more team news on that one in just a little while. Just want to turn our attention to the world of rugby, though. A massive weekend for rugby here in the region next weekend, where we will see HSBC Rugby Festival taking place down at the Sevens Ground Friday and Saturday. Thousands of boys, girls of all different age groups coming together from across the region to play in the only remaining rugby festival that is sponsored by HSBC. And they're bringing out Brian Habana, one of their rugby ambassadors, as part of the proceedings. So if you want to meet a World Cup winner, if you want to meet Brian Habana, then get yourself to the HSBC Rugby Festival next weekend. Bit of live rugby for you now. Let's go to the European Challenge Cup and, of course, the Champions Cup. Mark Archer.
Yeah, European Champions Cup footy underway in the Northern Hemisphere. 6 fixtures today. 2 early kickoffs, Tom, are both in Pool 3. And in the first match, Cardiff Blues at home to the French outfit Lyon. They lead them 33 points to 14. Saracens are having a close tussle against Glasgow Warriors. They're currently in the lead 24 points to 19. Later kickoffs in Ireland, where Munster will take on Exeter Chiefs, and in France, where Castres will host your beloved Gloucester. Also, Racing 92 will take on Scarlets, and Leicester Tigers will entertain Ulster. European Challenge Cup matches, a couple of early kickoffs in that format as well. Worcester Warriors trail at home to Stade Francais, 28 points to 19. And it's all tied up over in France with Pau, tied at 21 all with Ospreys. A couple of big results from last night. Edinburgh, they stunned the French heavyweights Montpellier to reach the quarterfinals, winning 19 points to 10. That means that Edinburgh do secure a home quarterfinal match for the Champions Cup last 16. So that's good news for them. And also the three times champions Toulon, who are having a pretty poor domestic season in the top 14 in France. They defeated Newcastle 27 points to 24. Well, our good friend Eddie Jones, he's been at it during the week because England have named their Six Nations squad. And lots of chat during the week, Tom, about the Spygate issues in football with the Leeds United team having that very controversial moment when they were accused and found guilty of sending a spy to Derby County. Well, this is what Eddie Jones had to say. He said a few years ago it was pretty commonplace in rugby. This is Eddie Jones talking about spying in sport and in particularly rugby union.
20 years ago it was quite common when there wasn't much vision of teams around, so you used to send coaches out to have a look at the opposition, put them with, you know, swaggers, hats on, all sorts of different sorts of things, dress
like
them
beards,
up, all that
binoculars.
Sort of thing. That used to go on, but I haven't seen much of it of late, and I think because there's so much abundance of vision you can get on teams, you don't really need to do that. But I'm sure it still goes on now and then.
You'd be pretty cross though, wouldn't you, if someone was spying on your side 3-4 days out of a World Cup final?
You've just got to make sure you take the precautions to minimise the risk of that happening, and we'll certainly do that.
That was fast Eddie Jones, the England coach, of course, talking about spying in rugby union a few years ago when that was the commonplace. Six Nations rugby gets underway in 2 weeks' time. Tom, mark your cards. February the 2nd, I can tell you that up at Murrayfield, the Scots will take on Italy in the first match. But the big match everyone's talking about is in Dublin, because who are Dublin playing? They're taking on England. That will be a massive match there. Ireland, in many people's books now, the number one team in world rugby, hosting England in Dublin. That will be a blockbuster of a weekend. This is what Eddie Jones had to say about his Six Nations selection and taking on Ireland.
They're a good team. They deserve all the praise they've been getting. They're well coached, well drilled. They've got a number of exceptional players in their side, and they've got a very methodical game plan, which maximises the strengths of their team. I don't expect, I prepare them to beat Ireland. We're very clear who our best players are, but we want competition in the squad. You know, we want blokes desperate to play for England, and to do that we need competition. So in some cases we've deliberately created competition to ensure that we get the best out of the players. Because to be the best team in the world, which we need to beat Ireland, we need players at their absolute best. We need them chomping at the bit. And to be chomping at the bit, you need to be hungry. And to be hungry, you need competition.
Interesting times as well for a lot of those nations, because obviously getting ready for what will be a competitive Six Nations this year, an eye on the World Cup after that as well. Not a great start to the year as well for England's chances. A bit of an injury scare on one of their key men, Owen Farrell. Their preparations against the Champions Island in Dublin.
Injured shoulder,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, if we learned how to tackle properly, it'd be fine.
Very good indeed. See where we're going with that one. It's not actually his shoulder, it's his thumb. He's had to have a procedure on his thumb. So he's got a sore thumb and looks like he might be out for a little while, but I'm sure they'll have him fit and raring to go for that Six Nations campaign.
And a pretty able replacement in George Ford if they need to shuffle the pack there. But yeah, Owen Farrell, I think he's integral now to Eddie Jones's game plan. He's a key lock in at number 10, and he's a key part, co-captain, isn't he, with Dylan Hartley, I think, who is injured and will miss some of the Six Nations. But yeah, Owen Farrell would be a massive blow for England, particularly when they head to Dublin to take on the very, very talented and dominating Irish side.
That's your rugby wrap for you now. Let's go to Ross Crist, who's going to tell us all about what should we talk about, Ross?
Well, let's head back stateside. Let's go to Brooklyn. It's UFC Fight Night. UFC teaming up with ESPN, signing a sponsorship deal. So this one will be on ESPN. Big merger there. Big, I guess, agreement between Dana White and the likes of ESPN, which is, I think, owned by ABC. But Henry Cejudo going against TJ Dillashaw. TJ Dillashaw dropping 29 pounds for this one, coming for Henry Cejudo's belt. Henry Cejudo, though, thinks he is ready for this big fight.
It's adversity. I've been competing my whole life. It's, you don't fake it till you make it. You face it. I face my problems. I traveled the world. I went out to Brazil. And I don't like leaving house. I went to Holland. I went to Asia. I did everything. I fired coaches. I did everything in my power to become the best. I had to wait 2.5 years to beat the man that beat me in two minutes and 36 seconds. To going out to fighting him again, a 5-1 underdog, and I became the UFC flyweight champion of the world. You tell me, man, am I ready? I'm ready. I'm just letting you guys know. I've been a champion my whole life. And I'm here, I'm cutting weight, I'm a little aggressive, but I want to let the people know that I'm ready.
Boy, I'll tell you what. If his interview is anything, I think he's ready for a fight. What wouldn't you say?
I think he's ready, yeah.
It's certainly, he's not going into a math test, is he? Right? So Henry Cejudo, he's the man with the belt. I also believe Henry Cejudo has a gold medal from the previous Olympics. I'm going to look that one up and get back to you. The man dropping weight to fight him is TJ Dillashaw. Now, gentlemen, generally in the UFC, you do not drop weight classes to go down in weight classes to get someone's belt. Generally, you see the trend is you move up in weight classes. So this is kind of odd. It's a little bit, you scratch your head a little bit. But TJ Dillashaw wants to come down. He wants this bantamweight belt, so he's dropping 29 pounds for this fight. Then his next fight, he wants to gain 40 pounds and fight Max Holloway. However, in order to get the Holloway fight, you need to become the world flyweight champion. And that you have to go through Henry Cejudo. And TJ Dillashaw, one of the UFC's premier fighters, is ready for the big fight.
No, I'm training to beat him in wrestling.
Okay.
I'm going to go out there. I'm gonna beat him. I want that gold medal as well, too. you know, I believe I'm the better MMA wrestler. And I'm going to go out there and prove it. So I'll train everywhere. I'm going to train my boxing, my kickboxing, my jiu-jitsu, and my wrestling. And that's my threat. My threat is that you never know what I'm going to do. I could be taking you down, or I could be kicking you in the head, and you have to make that decision on a split second. And that's why I get victories.
After this fight, I've heard plans of moving up to 145 to take on Max Holloway. So that's a 20-pound span.
Oh, yeah.
in two fights. Is that the plan, win or lose?
Who knows? I mean, yeah. I got long-term goals and I got short-term goals. Right now, my stepping stone is Henry Cejudo. Once I step past him, I'd love to fight Max Holloway. You know, I could be walking around 165 with the coaches and the team that I have. I'm a very professional athlete. I don't cut any corners. As proof in the pudding is me going down to 125s. You don't see fighters dropping a weight class.
Usually guys move up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And I'll be doing that. But this is a lot of work, and I'm proving that I'm the best by doing it. And so, again, I want to break records. I want to leave the sport the greatest of all time, and that's the perfect way to do it.
So it's UFC Fight Night, Cejudo Dillashaw. That's going to be Saturday night in the States, so it's going to be early morning here if you want to tune into that one. You're going to have to get up early, but it'll be an awesome showdown. Also on the other end of the card, it's Donald Cowboy Cerrone. He's dropping back to lightweight to face Alexander Hernandez. And former Pro Bowl defensive end Greg Hardy, who got kicked out of the NFL for domestic abuse, NFL career was derailed by domestic violence, makes his UFC debut. There's a lot of entertaining things on this UFC Fight Night card, so get up early if you're a fight freak. You'll want to see this one. I'm going to tune into this one. I'll be live tweeting about it, Tommy.
Good on you, fella. Thanks so much indeed. We'll have more from Ross, more from Arch, and more from the rest of the team in just a few moments' time as we wrap things up on yet another edition of The Grill. We're down at Barasti, and I'm not going to lie to you, it's a little bit cold. We don't get to say that very often. It's a little bit breezy down here. So we will take a short break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up.
Go! This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Yeah, thanks so much indeed for all of your thoughts throughout the show. Thanks also to all of you for your thoughts and feedback. Let's get to the cricket, because I think the first innings has been completed.
Yeah, this is the first one-day international taking place in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. It's the Proteas hosting Pakistan. It's the first of a five-match ODI series. South Africa dominant and very comfortable winners in the Test series. Will they do the same in the ODI series? Well, I can tell you, at halfway stage of the first ODI, they've compiled a very competitive 266 for two in their 50 overs. It's an unbeaten century to Hashim Amla, 108 not out. He scored. Hendricks opening the batting scored 45. And then the new man, the debutant, Rassi van der Dusen, has scored 93 off 101 deliveries, 6 fours and 3 sixes on debut. So a very promising debut there for the youngster. So South Africa batting first, 266 for two. Pakistan, when they bat, will need 267 for victory.
We're just having a little look at some of the big results from the Australian Open from earlier on today. I suppose the big talking point is the fact that Venus Williams is out of the tournament. She went down to Simona Halep in straight set. 6-2, 6-3 was the score that one. Garbi Muguruza is through as well, again in straight sets, winning the first one on a tie break, 7-5. And then the second set of 6-2. So victory for Halep against Venus Williams sets up a next round tie against Serena.
There we go. There we have it. And that'll be an exciting one. It's going to be the business end of the final 16. You know, all the big seeds getting through out there in Melbourne. It's been an exciting tournament. However, there's been a black cloud over the tournament, if you will, Tom, okay, because a tennis feud has been just rolling on and on between Bernie Tomic and Leighton Hewitt over an incident that he alleged happened 9 years ago. So here's the news behind this. Okay, Bernie Tomic's father said that he's going to take legal action against Leighton Hewitt because he said Leighton Hewitt used to bully Bernie when he was on the Davis Cup back in 2010. Here we see bullying happening in the NFL. We saw it happen in the Miami Dolphins. We saw some player suspensions. We saw Jonathan Martin have to leave the league. So we're starting to see this bullying issue come up in the sport of tennis. Certainly a sport where you think of sportsmanship, wouldn't you? Well, Leighton Hewitt had his response on all of the bullying allegations against him.
That is what we've come to expect from Bernie. Yeah, after, yeah, pretty much whatever Grand Slam it is, after a first-round loss, he'll come out with something. For me, the biggest frustration is I feel like I really went out of my way to help Bernie. I think the threats that I've received for me and my family that I've had for a year and a half now, I don't think anyone would reach out to a person that speaks like that. So, well, it started because of blackmails to do with wildcards, but this was over a year ago. Blackmail, threats, and physical, yeah. Oh, it makes me disappointed, you know, the biggest thing, because deep down Bernie knows what I've done for him. When I was working with Bernie, the biggest thing I probably saw with him was he didn't work hard enough. Yeah, I don't know what's happened, you know, why Bernie's Bernie. You know, I have no idea. You know, it's probably his upbringing, I'd say. You know, on day one we had these great wins by a lot of our guys, and that all this Bernie comments overshadows it. You know, it's one clown making a silly comment, and that's the main news. He won't play Davis Cup while I have anything to do with it.
Well, it sounds like they're not going to be sitting down for tea anytime soon, huh?
Won't be a weekend at Bernie's for those two, will it?
I think they're not the best of terms at the moment, are they?
Well, Leighton Hewitt is the captain for Australia when it comes to the Davis Cup, so he gets to hand-select his players, and Bernie Tomic is one of the best players in Australia, so something's going to come to a head here when you see two of these guys going at it.
I'd get Nick Kyrgios in the mix. He can probably sort it out.
I'm sure.
Reading through.
Bit of dispute resolution by Nick Kyrgios.
Reading through Bernie Tomic's response to this one, he said he spoke to News Corp Australia saying, nice, Leighton, really nice. To think how low a person you actually are, and it's why the Australian public never liked you. I got nothing to do with your family. I don't care what's wrong with you. Guess what? You're a liar. Nice. You know, it's good, you know.
So this has been over this whole entire Australian Open because, you know, it is overshadowing the Australian success. There's been a lot of Australian success on the men's side of things and on the women's side of things. Ash Barty moved through to the round of 16. She's been playing quite well. And so, it's you know, Nick Kyrgios has also been playing well. So it's just like, guys, could you save your beef for one other time when your country is on the whole entire world's lens? You know, could you just wait 1 week to settle this, you know? Because everyone's looking at Australia, and you have two Australians that are just, it seems like, having a bit of a bickering dispute in the media during their one chance to host an event that they have about once a year. Mm. So it's quite sad.
Novak Djokovic is also having a bit of a moan. He's been talking about the floodlight issues down at the Australian Open. He dropped a set for the first time in the tournament, but did go on to beat Denis Shapovalov in that particular round. Some big games to look forward to as well. Tomorrow, Roger Federer in action against Stefanos Tsitsipas, a man who played here at the Dubai Duty Free last year. So we'll keep an eye on him. What's that all this chat with Andy Murray? I know he was announced for Dubai, but highly unlikely he'll be here. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a massively strong field announced for the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships, but I think he hasn't made an official decision. But you would expect, given his recent statement a week or so ago about his very degenerative injury in his hip, that you would think that either he's going to be injured or requiring some surgery, and I would doubt whether he will make an appearance at the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships.
We are almost out of time. Just a few pieces of business we need to wrap up on. Remind us who won down the road.
Congratulations to the Irishman Shane Lowry. 18 under par. It means that he has won the Falcon Trophy for the first time. He is the champion of the 2019 Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA. He had a one-shot victory from the South African Richard Sterne. So congratulations to Shane Lowry and also to the organisers down there. Great event. And Shane Lowry is your 2019 champion.
And we have I still haven't got an answer for you, so you're going to have to put me out of my misery. The quiz set question that you set a little earlier on.
Yeah, we put out a quiz question. I'm just going to pull it up here. Just give me 1 second.
No worries, mate.
Do you have any guesses you want to give to me? I played with David Beckham. I played with Ryan Giggs. I played with Ashley Young, Patrick Barra, Sol Campbell, Aaron Ramsey, Michael Owen, Steven Gerrard, Mo Salah. Who am I? Mark Archer?
It's someone that played.
I shouldn't have came to you. We're going to be here for about 20 minutes.
We can't. We've got to go to the football. Yeah,
tell me who it is. Take me out of.
Tom?
No idea.
Micah Richards? Defender.
Yeah.
Yes.
When did you play with Ryan Giggs?
I think the Florentina thing. He was on loan there for a little bit. I don't know when he played with Ryan Giggs.
Okay. You just made the all answer right, up.
We'll I did not make
made,
that up.
You made that answer up.
I will prove it to you in a second. All right. Anyways, February 1st, Neil Young was going to join us today. He's the race director of the Reebok Wadi B Run. Unfortunately, he got pulled aside in traffic. So he just some quick shout outs about that race in a couple weeks. It is the 27th edition of the race. It's in Dibba, right over the border in Oman. It's a team relay for five people. Its registration is still open. If you're worried about the border and getting across the border, maximum waiting time at the border is 15 minutes due to the good relationship with the border police and the army. So if you're interested in joining this race, there's over 1,000 people that have now joined this race from all over the globe. Registration closes in less than a week. If you're interested in sponsoring the race, you can email sponsorship@wadib.com. That is wadib BIH.com for all information on this wonderful race. Limited spots available. 72 kilometers for the team and solo race. That is crazy if you do that solo. 50 kilometers for team and solo race and 30 kilometers solo race. I will be at this race. Looking forward to this one.
Good on you, Roscoe. Thanks so much indeed for your time. Thanks to your time, Mr. Mark Archer. Thanks to Robbie Greenfield, all the team down at the Gulf. Esther Kathubi, thank you very much indeed to you for being here. Taking one for the team is a cold one. It's unfair that you had to come up here today. Thanks to all the branding and the engineering team back at Harris as well. And, of course, Viva Las Vegas back in the studio as well.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.